This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, and you'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Well, whether you garden in containers, in a community garden, or in the backyard, gardening has so many rewards. And our guests this afternoon in this portion of the program are avid gardeners. They are horticulturist Diane Noland and arborist Mike Brunk. They're with us this afternoon to talk about the garden in the summertime, and we'll also talk about trees and caring for them. Listeners, I welcome your telephone calls for Mike and Diane. If you have questions about trees, about landscaping, flowers, vegetables, herbs, they can help. Here are the telephone numbers. In the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number if you're outside the local dialing area. That number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Diane Noland is the host of the WILL TV program, Illinois Gardener. The program airs on Thursday evenings at 7 and at 11 o'clock on Saturday mornings. Mike Brunk is the arborist for the city of Urbana, and both have been frequent guests over the years here on the Afternoon Magazine.
Because we enjoy it so much being with you, Celeste.
True. Well, it's so much fun to have the two of you in.
And you're an avid gardener, too, so
well,
it makes it fun.
I'm not as avid as I'd like to be. I'm kind of a novice, but I putter.
Yeah. Puttering is good.
Yeah. So let's give the phone numbers once again, 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Well, maybe we should start out here by talking a little bit about the cool and wet early part of the growing season we've had, and how has that affected things that are out there in the world, the trees, the flowers?
Don't we love the Midwest?
It's always an adventure. Well, I know that we've gotten a lot of good growth on trees and shrubs.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've noticed some of the conifers, they just had tremendous growth. So hopefully it won't be weak growth. But a lot of things really grew, as did weeds.
It was a good winter for trees.
Oh, good.
Although we do have some trees sensitive to moist springs, such as the sycamore, that has fungal problem called anthracnose. And when we have a wet spring like we do now, it drops leaves and twigs, and some of the trees that are harder hit aren't even leafed out until early June. So it won't kill the tree. It just makes them really ugly and a lot of work to clean up.
Sculptural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for next year. They're pretty hardy, though. I mean, those sycamores, they have rough spots. Sometimes you get a cold snap and they have to start over again.
But as of last week and this week, it's pretty warm. So I think, you know, it's going to come out.
Now, it's been so wet. Is it a good time to plant a tree, or should we wait till things dry out a little bit more? Although we haven't had rain now for
I have good drying at my house. I think, actually, we've had some good dry spells. So it will be, as long as it's not low-lying, which you probably don't want to put a tree where it's going to stay that moist anyway, it's really a good indicator of putting it where to put a tree. If it's dried out, it's probably a good place for it. If it's wet, avoid it.
Okay. Speaking of where to put a tree and how to select a tree and whatnot, let's mention this publication, Under the Canopy, Creating Personal Green Space. This is a publication that the city of Urbana put together with a broad team of experts.
That's right.
And it has gotten a wonderful award, Mike.
Tell us, Mike.
We're very excited about that. We entered it into the American Public Works Association's International Award Contest, and we won under the category of exceptional journalism, exceptional performance in journalism. So it now has an international award to it. So it's a very neat publication that was written with a lot of expertise from around the state, Western Illinois University, Southern Illinois University, here the several people from the University of Illinois, Morton Arboretum, a number of city arborists certainly donated their time. City of Champaign, City of Bloomington, City of Macomb, City of Belleville, Village of Addison, Village of Homewood, and others. So we really got a lot of input from a lot of arborists and professionals from around the state to write a publication that was to answer the common questions of the homeowner. with working with trees and selecting trees for one's personal property.
And no tax dollars were spent.
No tax dollars were spent. We worked 2 years to raise the funds through private donations to do the piece.
Now,
excellent.
If people want to get their hands on this, how do they do that?
Excellent question. The extension offices around the state were informed and can find out where to acquire bulk amounts of the publication. So I suggest people call their local extension office as one option. There are numerous cities around the state of Illinois that have also purchased bulk amounts. So I'd either contact your local extension office and or your local community. And they're available for free to the public. The communities and extension offices they're available to them at cost, so they have to buy bulk amounts.
And it's just gorgeous. When you open it up, it eventually opens into
a big poster.
A poster.
Yeah, beautiful.
And I was
poster.
Looking at the trees. It shows the tree habit and either flower or fall color, and then a close-up of the leaf, and if there's any cones or flowers, it's wonderful. And, Mike, I just got a Sweet Bay Magnolia myself, Magnolia
yeah,
virginiana.
Well, the trees listed
it's
in this
nice.
Publication, there's 32 of them, and the purpose of the chosen 32 is that they are lesser-known trees. So we wanted to promote lesser-known trees to the public that can take the place of the common trees. We really want to diversify our urban forest, and these are excellent trees. It was very hard to limit it to 32, but we thought if we did a second edition or a third edition, we could change the trees.
One of the things I really like about it is it has recommendations for different sizes. So if you need a small tree, there's some recommendations. If you need something big, recommendations, and something just right in between.
I just love the white fringe tree. It's really almost a shrub.
It is.
And I just planted one 2 years ago.
And that's very tolerable
beautiful.
Of poor soils.
It says finding. That, tolerant of urban conditions, but it has this lovely lacy white flower in May. Really, really
fringy-like.
Fringy and white.
Okay.
It's very pretty.
So, yeah,
I think it's
nice.
A native, too.
So if listeners are interested in this guide, this poster-sized guide, it folds up very nicely, and they should get in contact with their extension office.
Yeah,
so nice.
It's pretty neat. It goes, you know, it gives you a way to plan your backyard or your front yard. It has a right tree in the right place checklist. It has a list of things to avoid. It has some detail on planting around utility lines, which is extremely important because we have conflict because of poor thought and tree location near utility lines, so that's very important.
And it makes you think of the mature size, which is always important.
That's correct. That really is.
Well, what do you say we talk with some listeners?
Okay.
Now? Let's go to the phones and let's talk with a listener on line one who's waiting for us in Urbana. Hi.
Hello.
Hello there.
I'm so pleased. I'd like to continue talking about trees. Say 30 years ago, we bought some properties in Vermilion County. But there were persimmon trees there, and they've continued. One fell down. I don't know exactly why. I think it was in a big storm. That was about 15 years ago. And then 3 years ago, a lightning strike hit one, and it has perished. It's still standing. But the third one is now, I mean, when we bought it 30 years ago, this tree was a pretty good girth, so I think it was old. And it's getting just older and older, and I'm not sure how long it's supposed to live. But yet, last summer, it started dropping bark off of its branches in the trunk, which goes up probably 40, 50 feet. But, and I was concerned about it because I could see that the bark was falling, and I could see the tree underneath it.
Sure.
But this year, it's leafed out. It's huge. It had a huge bunch of persimmons last fall, which were sweet and very good. But now it looks great. I mean, I don't know what to make of this. Is it just getting old and getting close to its being finished as a tree, or why would it be dropping bark? I mean, it looks like the bark from, say, 20, 30 feet up, and all the way up is gone, but the leaves came out way up there, too.
Okay, there's a couple things to look at. What your tree could have been bruised or damaged from a number of different things. Mm-hmm. So one of the better things you can do for older trees is to keep the dead wood trimmed out of it. If there are dead branches up in the tree, those should be trimmed back to the appropriate node, a lot of times back to the trunk. But you want to keep the dead wood out of a tree. Why it's dropping bark, or is there dieback in the tree? Are there dead limbs up in the top of the tree?
No. I mean, I thought there would be. I thought the top of the tree would be totally, you know, dead. But it looks fine. I mean, the leaves came out and way up to the top, and it's very puzzling to me. I don't know exactly what happened to it.
Sometimes there can be damage to the trunk of the tree, whether it was nicked by a mower or a string trimmer.
No, impossible. We don't even mow around that thing.
Could it be critters?
Could be critters.
Well, there's a population of little moles that run around under there.
Could be some things going on underground. Do you use any kind of chemicals in the area where the tree is?
No.
Lawn care chemicals?
No.
So you don't, is it a pasture land?
It's in a yard that gets mowed, but I mean, we mow up to maybe within 15 feet of the trunk and not any closer. That's very, not every week, maybe once a month, so it probably was mowed under there about mm-hmm. three times last year.
Well, it sounds like it could have been stressed for some reason or another. So whether it was mechanic or natural, one of the better things you can do is just keep an eye on it. And during the dry parts of the season, to get a lawn sprinkler out there and to water the area that is generally at least under the drip line of the tree, but it's probably broader than that. The roots will spread out 2 to 3 times away from the trunk as the tree is tall. So on mature trees, they need to be watered a little differently, actually a lot differently than young trees. And mature trees like deep watering, good soaking, you know, at least once a month if we don't have the rain.
All right.
So that's in the heat of the summer in July and August. And that will help keep a tree vigorous.
Uh-huh.
Without seeing it and looking at it firsthand, I'm guessing what could be going on.
I have no idea, but the thing is, gorgeous again, and it has a lot of little flowers. That means it's going to have fruit on it. So.
It sounds like this spring, the moisture is really good medicine for that tree.
Sounds like it is.
But if the water doesn't continue, you know, if the moisture doesn't continue, you'll want to watch that. But I think this moist spring probably helped it a little bit if it was suffering from stress from, you know, too much drought.
Well, anyway, I will keep an eye on it, and I just was pretty curious if you've ever seen, you know, the beautiful bark that a persimmon has. It's dropped off in big sheets, and
wow,
I couldn't believe it. But now it's back. I mean, the tree looks fine, and I can't explain why, because the bark isn't there anymore. There's a nice brown tree showing through there.
Well, you'll need to maintain its vigor because it's under stress. It's missing some of the cambium layer. For whatever reason, that died back, and there's a sufficient amount to keep it alive, but it's not as vigorous as it would be with a good.
How old do you know bark. How old trees get to be? Is it,
we have.
Like, it's at least, I would guess it's at least 60 years old.
We have trees in southern Illinois that are 400 and 500 years old, maybe older.
That are persimmon trees?
No, not persimmon. These are bald cypress that I'm thinking of. But trees can live, my point, quite old if they have the right natural environment and they're not disturbed.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I'll keep an eye on it. It's one of my faves.
Okay. Thank well, thanks for the call. Good luck with that. And ideally, I guess we want to have about an inch of rain a week during the summer.
Ideally. And we've got so much moisture in the ground table that, you know, it could go a little longer than that.
Okay. One more question. You mentioned critters, Diane. Are moles problematic?
Not usually.
For trees or,
I mean, they like grubs and...
They're problematic for people who like the perfect-looking lawn.
Okay.
They can get in there and tunnel and leave mounds and, you know, dull mower blades because of the dirt mounds and things. But I don't.
But not really trees.
No. Mm-mm.
I was just wondering if it would be, one year on a pine, I had a sapsucker that made perfect holes up and down in the, you know, on the trunk, mm-hmm. just in one area, and the bark came off. But, you know, I don't know that they affect persimmons.
Well, we've seen lightning strikes, too.
That's true.
And you just don't know
And if it's an old tree.
And it just blew the bark right off the tree. Hmm. A lot of times that'll kill a tree, but a lot of times it won't either.
If it's only on one side, it will keep going.
Okay. Well, let's go back to the phones and take another call. A listener in Piatt County on line 4. Hi.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I had a question since I just bought some property myself. And when I hear people talk about trees like persimmon or, say, maybe bald cypress or a catalpa, you never see those trees anywhere. And, you know, at the big box stores, you know, it's always maples. And so I was wondering, are there reliable nurseries where you can call up and say, I'd like a bald cypress that's, you know, a little bigger than a stick? You know, I'm unfamiliar with the process, really.
Certainly.
You bet there are.
Yeah, there's certainly reliable nurseries. In fact, buying trees from the big box stores has gotten us in trouble in this country in the recent past because disease has been spread.
Mm-hmm.
Dogwood anthracnose was one disease that was spread by the big box stores bringing in trees from another area.
Oh.
So I think it just goes to show that the best way that you should at least first attempt to buy trees for your property is to look in the general area where you live and ensure that the trees are grown in that area.
Okay.
The same soil types if you can, certainly the same temperatures, and you'll have the best luck with tree survivability that way.
So you probably have to go to a nursery and just ask them, like a smaller nursery or something, and then do they order them?
No, a larger nursery would probably have the bald cypress right on site.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure about catalpa. Now, I just planted a Chinese catalpa, but I don't know about
it. It's an old-fashioned tree.
It is.
And I think that can be searched for possibly on the Internet. And you may have to go out of the area to find it, but it's an old-fashioned tree that may or may not be that easy to find.
You may want to make friends with folks who have a catalpa in the woodland areas in Piatt County because you might be able to find a little seedling. That's how I got this other catalpa.
Now, there are fruit and nut tree nurseries.
Yes.
And there's one that I can think of that begins with an O. O-I-K-O or O-I-K-A. Now, and in that case, I think that I can't remember exactly where they are, but you can Google these kinds of things. And one good way to Google tree choices to see if you like a tree or not is to use Google Images.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if you've ever done that. And if you Google under images, then you'll actually get to see the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll find a lot of nurseries will have those pictures.
Okay.
And then it's just a matter of finding the nurseries that are in your plant zone.
Okay.
Now, there's a heat zone and there's a cold zone.
Uh-huh.
And you should make sure that what you're purchasing is in both of those, the areas that are compatible with where your farm is or your land.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then my second question is that I did have some Norway spruce planted, four, and one was just beautiful. It's about 6 feet tall, and it's really deep green. It's beautiful, and it's done well over the winter, but the three other ones are smaller, and they're not as tall, and they're not as green. Would that be, is it chlorosis, or are they suffering, do they need fertilizer?
Well, it really It depends on the soil that you've put them in. Is this a new subdivision or
No, it's on old farm property and they're all within the same, you know, 25-30 feet.
You may check to see whether those are wetter than the one that looks healthy.
Okay.
I know personally I have kind of a same situation, although it was different conifers, and one was in an extremely wet area and they're only about 20 feet apart.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually too wet for that particular tree in that area.
Okay, I'll check that. But
so it could be overly wet.
Mm-hmm.
It could be pH. I don't know if they'd be in a little zone of sand or they're in a clay more of a clay area than what the other one is. It's possible. It's also possible that, you know, out of all the trees that you got, that there was one that was healthier and had a better root system from the nursery than the other three. That's a possibility.
It looks like it to me because it's very happy.
And if that's the case, you can almost wait it out.
Yeah, take time, have patience, and just let them kind of grow out of it. But make sure you're not overwatering them. They like well-drained soil.
Okay, I'll do that, and thanks so much for your help.
You're very welcome. Mm-hmm.
And I noticed on the under the canopy, they showed Serbian spruce,
yes,
which is kind of interesting. And I just had planted maybe five or six of those. So
sounds like you've got a forest out there going.
We did a windbreak about 3 years ago and probably put in 30 conifers, probably five or six different types. So it's really fun. But I do have the Norway spruce, and they were variable, and Douglas fir, and Black Hills spruce, and white pine, because I like the
a good mix look. like a windbreak should be.
That's, and it's going to be gorgeous. I love the texture differences. It's just really very pretty.
Sounds fun.
Let's take another call. A listener on line two in Urbana. Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. Two questions. First of all, one of my sycamores that the city of Urbana owns in front of my house, it looked like it was completely dead, and it came back. Now, one of my arborist or amateur arborist friends says this is a sycamore anthracnos, or the condition that woodcutters get from cutting green sycamores, sycamore anthracnosis. What you know about that? And then we're supposed to understand that the emerald ash borer is not in town. And I can tell you that's very definitely not the case, because last winter I got a load of ash in, and I didn't know what the heck happened. It's springtime. It was still in front of the fireplace, and it was after, around the fireplace. And so these borers started coming out. You know, they look like little bees, and they're emerald colored, and they fit all the description of the emerald ash borer. Anyway, that's what I have. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Okay.
First of all, let's get to the immediate question. If the emerald insect, emerald colored insect, was the size of a honeybee, it was probably too large for an emerald ash borer. They're more the size of a leafhopper. Are you still on the air?
No, he hung up.
I would have liked to have gotten his address if he'd call back. I'd be glad to come out and check the trees around there if he's certain that it was emerald ash borer.
And where did the firewood come from?
We need to know a little more detail from him, so I would like to have his name and phone number, and I'd come out personally and chat with him. The two questions on the sycamore. There is a sycamore anthracnos. We were talking about that earlier before the show, or at the beginning of the show. And it is a fungal problem with the tree that won't kill the tree. It just causes it to drop twigs and leaves and makes the tree a little dirtier to clean up and not as pretty. As far as the breathing problem with the trees, it's the fuzz on the trees. It doesn't have anything to do with the fungus. The sycamore leaves are very fuzzy if you look at the leaf. And they're very hard to chip. Once they go through a chipper when they're dry, because it does irritate one's nose and throat. But it's the fuzz of the leaf and not the fungus that causes the tree to drop its leaves.
Okay, let's take another call. Listener in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hello. Yes, not a tree question. The last couple of years I've been growing Himalayan Jack in the Pulpit, and I was a little concerned that it might be invasive. It's very, very hardy. I don't think you can kill it. But it doesn't seem to be. And I'm finding them rather fascinating plants, and I'm wondering where I could get other species. I found a place where I could get the native species, which is very attractive.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not familiar with the Himalayan one.
How does that differ from...
Is it different coloration than the native Jack in the Pulpit?
It's a little different, and it doesn't seem to die back in the fall. It's full season.
Really?
I'm putting up, I believe you call them spathe.
Yes,
All summer.
Wow. And it's perfectly hardy, because it's...
I don't think you can kill it. They must grow on the top of Mount Everest.
That's what I was thinking. If it's up in the Himalayas, that is about our same climate. Well, maybe more mountainous, but still cold climate. I'm not really familiar with that one, but I do know there are the native ones that you said that you have too, but
I don't have them, but I found out where I could get them.
Oh, you don't? Well, you might go ahead and Google that as well. A good, reputable wildflower company would have them. And I think, you know, there's quite a few that you might want to check out in Wisconsin, Northern Illinois. I don't think there are any just right here. Occasionally, those might be available in May with the Grand Prairie Friends. They'll have prairie plants and wildflowers, and they may have them as well. But there are quite a few nurseries that in northern Illinois and up into Wisconsin. And if you found them in Minnesota and anywhere out from there, too, they would be perfectly hardy. But it's worth searching for those because they are beautiful. And in my woods, we'll have Jack and the Pulpits that are totally green, some that have just a little bit of a burgundy stripe, and then some are very burgundy, and it's all, you know, seedling variety, and, you know, it's just very interesting as well. What color is the Himalayan one?
It's all green, but there is a pattern to the leaf, trilobed leaf.
Oh, is it whitish?
Whitish, yes.
And green? Ooh.
It seems to grow either in full sun or deep shade, but it likes semi-shade best.
Right, that doesn't surprise me. But full sun, that surprises me. Wow.
Well, the leaf... the whiteness at the center along the vein became more pronounced, and I didn't like it as well.
And that's probably from so much sun.
Yeah.
Well, definitely search online because there are quite a few places, and I've gotten catalogs. Just none of the names come to me right at the moment, but there are quite a few that you can definitely check out. And they're grown. They're not harvested from native areas, and that's what you want to be sure of.
That's important, yes.
Yes,
I think worldwide there are about 20 species, aren't there? Something in that order. Not a big family.
Not a big one, but that's still impressive to have 20. So
yeah, I'd certainly like to find some of the others.
Well, I wish you well.
Thank you.
There's a is it Andreessen or Anderson Arboretum in Minnesota that has a plant find. You can become a member, and you have access to their plant data, and you can go online and find odd sources for odd plants.
Andreessen or Anderson, you say?
Yes, it's one or the other.
Well, there's an Anderson Garden in Rockford, but
I'm going up there Sunday.
It's in Minnesota.
This is Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Now let's go back to the listener in Urbana with the ash question and the sycamore issue. He's back with us.
Okay, great.
Line two. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and I'm sorry I rang off.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, now these beetles are about 3/4 inch long. They came out of these ash logs.
Okay, that puts me at ease because they're not their emerald ash borer.
All right.
But you make a very good point, and one way the emerald ash borer is going to get into our community is from firewood, and we need to be very careful about where we get our firewood. In fact, it's best just to get it locally.
Yes.
If we become infested with the emerald ash borer, most likely what will happen is the cities, both Champaign and Urbana, will take a stand that all ash trees will need to be removed.
Right.
Public and private. And it'll be the private landowner that'll be responsible for the cost of their own trees.
I see.
It's just a terrible devastation that's going on up in northern Illinois, and
right.
it's a very aggressive way to handle it, but it does, and it's been proven with the Asian longhorn beetle, that it's a way to abate the problem.
Okay.
So we really want to be careful that we can keep that insect out of our community. But
all right. Now, what kind of a borer was this in these ashes that I had?
You know, I could probably find out, but I don't know offhand.
It scared me half to death.
Well, it should.
It looked like bees, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You could contact either Dr. Appleby or Phil Nixon. Those are our entomologists, as well as there are quite a few others, Dr. Weinzerl. But I know Dr. Appleby is really aggressive on seeking out these things. His name is Dr. Jim Appleby at the university, and he would be he would be right there if you ever did you save any of them?
No, this was last year.
Yeah.
So I burnt the wood as quick as I could.
Mm-hmm. Right. But if this happens, or if you know of anyone that does, either of those two gentlemen, you could either send them a specimen or call the university and get their numbers, and they would be interested in it. Because I know Jim Appleby's made a flyer, a full-color flyer, to show all the different stages so you know what it is and what it isn't. You know, it shows some of the things. So an entomologist is the way to go, I would say.
All right.
And recommend that if you know of other folks who are curious about it. Because there are some masqueraders.
Right, I should have gotten a sample of one of the insects, but I didn't. You know, I just kind of freaked out and burned the wood as
Yes, quick, take care of it.
Jim has a very good picture catalog that he could certainly provide to kind of thumb through there and find out the guilty party,
the interlopers that are trying to make people think that it's emerald ash borer. But his name is Dr. Jim Appleby, and he's in the Department of NRES.
Yes,
and if you wanted to get a hold of him, or even through maybe our Champaign County Extension Service, they would maybe have that flyer as well.
Okay. Well, we're all very paranoid about this, and I just recently, became informed. Thank you for straightening me out on this, and I'm greatly relieved that it isn't the emerald ash borer.
Isn't
Thank
that
everybody
the
is.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks
for the call this afternoon. Our guests are Diane Noland. She's a teaching associate in natural resources and environmental sciences at the University of Illinois. She's also the host of WILL-TV's Illinois Gardener. Also with us this afternoon, Mike Brunk. He is the arborist for the city of Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. If you'd like to talk with our guests this afternoon, 333-9455 and toll free 800-222-9455. Let's take a call now from Champaign. Line 3, hi. Line 3? Let's go on and take another call. Let's try line 1. Sydney, good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
We planted some blue spruces about a year ago, and this spring they had marvelous new growth, really great. Then they spent over 4 days underwater in the recent flooding. All the new growth has dried up and fallen off. And the other needles are real gray and don't feel very good, but they don't come off. Are they going to survive, and what can we do to help them?
That's a good question. They may or may not. I would imagine that they would be dried up and brown if the tree was dead, but sometimes conifers take a little while to brown up. Could be a slow process. What you can do, I can answer that question, is if you have any mulch on top of the tree, remove it. Help that soil breathe to get some air exchange and to help the area dry out.
Okay.
That'd be about the best thing you can do. And certainly, you're not watering them anymore, but
right.
You have to be careful you don't let them dry out too long either. So you'll want to investigate the soil outside the root ball, maybe with a hand spade. Make sure you're outside the area where the roots are. If they're freshly, newly planted, it should be easy to do. And take a pinch of the soil 4 to 6 inches deep. And if it rolls into a ball and it will hold the form of a ball, it has ample moisture. If it crumbles, then it's time for watering.
Okay. Is fertilizer a good idea at this point?
No.
I would say not.
Okay.
Usually you want to let the roots grow for the first 3 years after a tree is planted in order to balance that root growth and the top growth.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call. Next we take a call in Urbana, a listener in Urbana. Line 2, hi.
Hi. Just hearing about plants underwater, I did it on purpose as an attempt to perform CPR on some basil plants we bought at the farmer's market on Saturday that I forgot about. And when my husband discovered them, they were looking pretty limp. And sometimes I've had things get that limp and not recover even when watered. So I thought, well, why not see what happens if I just dunk them completely, submerge them completely in a bucket of water. And sure enough, it was almost like seeing something come back to life. I guess my thought was that maybe the plant was so limp that the transpiration wouldn't go on and it wouldn't pull water up through the roots. So that was my thought. And I did the same thing to a hanging basket. I thought I had my automatic watering system set up for the hanging basket, and I didn't. And it was pretty sad. So I put it in the bathtub and pretty much submerged it in the bathtub. And by golly, it looks fine and dandy now. So I just wanted to share that technique in case it hadn't occurred to other people. I'm sure I'm not the only one.
Yeah. You are right, because sometimes things are so dried out, it really jump-starts them. And the secret is a lot of moisture, but for a short duration,
right,
like you did. And what happened is several things with the past week's flooding. It was 2, 3, and 4 days, and it was the duration, not the flood.
Right.
If it had been a flood and then come down, usually nothing dies. But when it's the duration, so as long as you just jump start your plants with moisture, you know, for small amounts of time, it really does get them going quickly.
Yeah, but this was just a couple of hours.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention that. Thanks a bunch for being there.
Thanks for the call. And then let's take another call. A listener also in Urbana, line 3. Hi.
Hi. I take a lot of pictures each fall of the fall colors in Urbana, and I've noticed sugar maples dying off, and in particular on McHenry between Vine and Race. Mm-hmm. I watch that carefully every year, and it seems like one or two sugar maples have died on that stretch, you know, basically every year. And I think I've noticed it elsewhere in town as well, and I'm wondering if you could comment on that and what might be happening.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it's hard to. We have over 100-year-old sugar maples over on the Green Street and Elm Street west of Lincoln Avenue. They're doing fairly well on Elm Street, but they're not on Green Street, and we're losing them there. And I think what's going on that particular stretch is urban conditions. We have a lot of development going along Green Street. We have a lot of snow removal and therefore salt use on Green Street. And it's created a very harsh area where we're losing the ancient trees. And then when we try to replace with the young sugar maples, we're not able to get them to grow. And we're losing them at a younger age. And I think that is that the older trees are so well established that they're able to insulate themselves from the newer pollution and urban adversities that we have better than the younger trees. Now, in McHenry, it's a little different story. We have trees there that were planted back in the 80s, and that's a heavier clay soil area. In fact, it was a kind of a wet area before it was made into a subdivision. So we have a wet clay soil there, and sugar maples don't do well on that kind of a soil. So they are coming of an age that they just can't seem to support themselves with the root system because of the soils that are in low oxygen. So I think kind of two things going on in those two areas.
Are there sugar maples elsewhere in town besides these two locations that you've noticed are having difficulties? And it seems like the sugar maple tree will be short on leaves during the summer growing period, and then basically the next year the tree is dead. But are there other places in Urbana that you notice this? I think I have, but I right now I can't remember where.
Well, the sugar maples are some of our oldest trees, and the urban conditions are slowly causing a decline in not only sugar maples, but a lot of our older trees. So, yes, they are declining elsewhere around town, and there's a number of reasons for all our trees, and it points out the tough climate that they have to live in, but we're cutting roots for sidewalk repair. Roots are being damaged because of water main repair and streetlight repair, the salt from snow removal, the impervious area that is all around town in our sidewalks, our streets, our roofs. It's all just created a very harsh condition. And one of the reasons we're trying to diversify our urban forest because we're trying to mix things up so we have less decline and less of a hit on our urban forest when one kind of species takes a hit, if you will.
Mike, what trees have you found are good to go back in as a small tree to replace?
We're trying, although now they're hard to find. We found a tree that had a sugar maple fall color, and it's called a Pacific Sunset maple. And its cross is a Norway maple, which has some problems with verticillin wilt, and the Truncatum maple. And it's been a very good tree for us and handles the urban environments, but it's a very brittle tree when it's young, so the nurseries are having a hard time shipping it without damaging it. It's a tough tree once you get it in the ground, but we're having a hard time finding it at the nurseries because...
And it's Pacific Sunset?
There's a Norway Sunset and a Pacific Sunset maple.
Interesting.
And they're a little smaller. They're more of a medium-sized tree.
Which is so, good.
Yeah, 40 to 50 feet in height. The fringe tree is another little small tree that's taken well to the urban conditions. Another tough one that we've been working with for the past 10 years, sawtooth oak.
Yes.
Now, that can be invasive in native natural areas. So if you have timberland, you want to stay away from the sawtooth oak. But in urban areas, we're not too concerned about that. It's not going to grow outside of the community. And there's some of the elms we're dabbling in again. You know, after we've been without elms for so long, they're coming up with new varieties of elms that are fairly tough.
Okay. Zelkova? Or just...
Zelkova is another good one, yes.
Because it's elm-like.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. What do you say? Take another call.
Okay.
We don't have much time left, and we got a couple of listeners who would like to talk with the two of you. So next we go to a listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I'm in Northwest Champaign, and my question is about kiwi. I have eight-year-old kiwi. I have one female, two males, and my female each year has including this year has multi clusters of flowers with eventually pea-sized kiwi fruit, and I know that it takes the male to fertilize the female. And my male plants, I have two, and they are always bare, including this year. So the female fruit dies out because it doesn't get fertilized.
Now, what you may want to do is put some feelers out to see if anyone else in town is growing kiwi or in the neighborhood, or get a different male plant and try to get it so it matches up. Because I know they're doing quite a bit of research on that at SIU, Southern Illinois University, because I visited there and they were growing kiwi on a diagonal pole to make it so that they got more light versus a vertical. You know, they were putting it on a 45-degree angle and were working with male, you know, different males that would pollinate it. So you may want to see if you can ask with, you know, does SIU have more information? And maybe look around town and see if anyone does, because with a little bit of a brush, you know, a small paintbrush, you could do some pollinating on your feet.
Oh, yeah.
But you'll have to make sure that it's flowering at the same time and be able to do that. But you may want, is it every year these males are not matching up?
The males never have, never produce flowers take care of the process.
And have you pruned the males very much, or do you just let them grow?
No, I prune.
Good.
Extensively, all except for new growth in spring, normally in February or early March.
What you might do is you might prune one heavier and then prune one less heavy and see if you can get the flowering time, or at least get some flowering, and see if, because you have two, you can do a little experimenting to try to match it up to get some flowers. But otherwise...
The males do produce flowers, don't they?
Yes, because that's how you're able to get it to pollinate. But something in our climate is not making them happy. And we are on the very northern edge for kiwi. But it's it's such a great fruit that it's worth trying.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful vine, too.
It is.
We have a giant one in our yard. We call it Cousin It. Remember that from
yes.
the Addams Family? Because it's just lush with foliage. So it's a lot of fun. And the birds love it. It's a good cover for the birds.
Perhaps he'll have to find someone who's got the...
I don't know if we have a male or a female. I don't know what it is, but we only have the one.
Call the Champaign County Extension office, and maybe some of the master gardeners could tell you.
Speaking of
which. And they're having a garden walk on Saturday. So that would be a great time. You know, show up at the Idea Garden on Florida and Lincoln Avenue, and maybe someone knows about some kiwis, and that'd be a great networking.
Oh, shoot, we have hundreds of people to ask.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so in the Master Gardener Annual Garden Walk in Champaign-Urbana is this Saturday from 9 to 4 p.m. There, we've got to leave it. We've got to run. We're out of time. We'll just have to have the two of you back.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds
Thanks
good.
So much.
Mike Brunk and Diane Noland.